America, and to all of our listeners all over the world, you are listening to yet another exciting episode of Let's Weekend, the show with no script and where we fart around while we're drinking.
Yeah, pretty much.
I don't think there's any more apt of description. this episode is going to be for April 21st, 2017. I am, as always, your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me is Philippe Bonanoffo, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Sologi. Say hi, people.
Hey.
Hello.
There we go. Guys, don't be so enthusiastic.
It's been a week.
Yeah, I'd be honest, I kind of there too. Yeah, so obviously we had some, we went through kind of a exhausting week over here, at least over here in America. But there was some sweetness to it as well, as we're going to get to. Because a certain individual from Fox News who has been there for over 20 years has finally gotten shit canned.
Ding dong, the witch is dead.
Yeah. We're also going to talk a little bit about the very messy custody battle and divorce case about a certain well-known internet conspiracy theorist. And, of course, we got some funnier stuff, some music news, a bunch of movie news, including what we're going to know about for Guardians of the Galaxy 3. Some Netflix news as well. So, we're going to have all that and more for you on Let's Weekend. So, start us off. Bill, what have you been up to this week? Bill?
Oh, you know, it helps if I unmute myself.
Yes, it yes. would.
So, yeah, I'm back to the Stormlight Archive again. So Oathbringer is the third book in the series is coming out later this year. So I figure, well, what the hell, I'll go through it nice and fresh and be ready for another, you know, 1,000 or so page brick to hit.
Mm-hmm.
Or a 45 or 46 hour audiobook in this case. But anyway.
Yeah.
But I won't go into detail about that because I've talked about it extensively on the show before. It's a great series. If you've not listened to it or read it or whatever media you prefer, just get it. It's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
What else have I been up to? Doing some work on the site. There's one major problem I have to resolve, and then I think we'll be able to start doing a transfer. So that's progressing nicely.
Alright.
Yeah. Apart from that, I'll be playing Guardians of the Galaxy, the Telltale series, Episode 1, Tangled Up in Blue. It's a Telltale game.
A lot of quick time events, a lot of multiple choice.
Yep.
Character development, et cetera.
Everything you'd expect in a Telltale game, it's got all of that. I'm hoping that I'll wrap it up over the weekend. I think I have maybe a chapter or so left, so should be able to just get through that pretty quick. It's good, I must say. It's, you know, since this is my first experience with a Telltale series, I have to say I'm impressed with it. I like it. Maybe that's because I like the subject matter, but okay, it's got some issues, but I'll talk about those in the review. But other than that, I'm liking the game. What else have I got going on? Well, getting some records in. I think I mentioned last week I ordered Journey's first album and then Kansas and Styx and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I got most of those, except instead of Journey's first album, I got their second album somehow. That was not what I ordered.
Mm.
That was annoying.
Yeah.
I contacted the seller on Discogs, and he's like, I have no idea how I screwed that up. That was really, really dumb. So he's basically just gave me that album for free and refunded me the money and said, if you place another order, I'm just going to include the album that I should have sent you in the first one, just in the next order. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was nice of him. So,
good deal.
Yeah, so, hey, And the copy of Look Into the Future that I got was pretty clean anyway, so I'm not really complaining. So,
right.
Yeah, since I'm trying to get all of them anyway, it's just trying to change the order that I was going to get them in, but yeah, no big deal. He also has a near-mint copy of Dream After Dream, which is stupendously hard to find for some reason.
Mm.
Yeah. You know that one that was the soundtrack for an anime that was terrible?
Are you sure it was an anime? I thought it was just a regular old movie.
Well, it was an animated movie.
Oh.
Yeah,
but I do know because they've got at least two songs on the Time Cube box set, so.
Yeah. So, you know, I'll be picking that up eventually, too, so. Yeah, lots of fun vinyl stuff, and my other order hasn't come in yet, but hopefully soon, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like music. I like music on large plastic discs.
Yeah.
These are fun. How about you, Pat?
I'm still kind of just enjoying the slow but noticeable move back to decent health that I've been going through over the past week. Mm. I am definitely noticing a difference as far as the depression, as far as my energy level goes. It will be a day to celebrate when I'm off of the hydrochlorothiazides, but that's a necessary evil as long as I've, I've got all this water and acids and who knows what that's kind of piled up in my ankles and feet for the last little while.
Yep.
So pleasant. But that's starting to work, and like the swelling in my legs has noticeably gone down, so that's it's doing its thing. I can't complain about that. Since I just got the Bomberman review done over at Smash Pad, it's a good game. You should play it. Now I'm just kind of getting ready to focus on personal projects for a while, get back to my YouTube channel, and maybe doing some more op-ed stuff like that. But, it's kind of nice to have an empty plate for a little while, you know? So that's been my week.
All right, but what about you, Chris?
Well, one of the big new releases on Netflix this week is Bill Nye Saves the World.
Oh, and this week.
Yeah, I did the responsible thing and binged the whole thing.
Nice.
And they've done a really good job with that show, modernizing it for adults, I guess, and probably teens as well. It's kind of similar to like Penn and Teller's Bullshit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That it's all about, they focus each episode on like one issue, like the first one is climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And generally they have pretty similar structure to the whole thing. Comes in, sort of introduces the topic, and maybe does a bit that sort of tries to break down a big topic into something more digestible, introduces a clip that is one of his sort of co-hosts that go out and about and bring a little report on that topic, that sort of stuff, like in the global warming stuff. The woman that handles that report goes out to Venice, Italy, and sort of talks to the people that are in charge of their measures of trying to stem the tide from further damaging the town. As they show, like, a man who ran a bookstore, and he has to get his walls fixed every so often, has actually like tubs in his back room just full of books, just to further waterproof his storage from a potential bad stuff. And as well as they have like apps that tells them when the tide is going to be coming in, and how high it's going to be, all that sort of stuff, sort of like the way we have weather apps.
Yeah.
Obviously, their stuff is much bigger scale thing. And Then it comes back. He talks to the host, the person that did the segment, a little bit, and brings it over to a table where he gets to talk to three guests. It's sort of like a little round table interview with people that are very familiar with the subject.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them, they have like a skeptic or somebody that presents like an opposing viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
It's not all of them, but there's one it's particularly about. Kind of like astrology, in a sense,
mm-hmm.
I guess. Like this kind of like fake pseudoscience stuff, and they have somebody that's actual astrology.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of have him sort of defend his own thing, and he even admits himself it's not really real. It's more of a performative art sort of thing. And it's a really interesting segment. Then they go back to another video segment, do that, and then Bill kind of has like one last skit at the end of the show. It's a really well done show. 13 mm-hmm. episodes this first season. And he jokes about it going on to like 17 seasons, and he finally saves the world. It has a nice bit of humor to it. He does this one thing. If you watch it, you'll see him do it to almost everybody. Instead of like shaking hands, he does the fist bump explosion thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like he just learned it shortly before he started doing the show. Now he does it with everybody. It's like the, hey, I'm a 6-year-old man trying to hang out with 20-year-olds sort of thing, which is nice and funny. And he has a nice sense of humor throughout the show, both making fun of himself as well as anytime he talks about things that happened in the 60s or 70s, he does an exaggerated old man voice,
mm-hmm.
Things like that. And it's just a really well-done show. People should definitely check it out, especially if you want to learn more about things. One of the episodes was about the anti-vaccine stuff.
Oh, yeah.
One of the segments was about India in the 90s when polio was huge there.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something I didn't really know a bunch about. And definitely learned a lot about how they had tens, if not hundreds of millions of people affected by polio, and by taking a quick turn in enforcing everybody to take polio vaccines multiple times a year. That's how they pretty much have eliminated it. The last case I think they've had is in 2011.
Yep.
And it was all paid for by the Bill and Linda Gates Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of good information there, as well as just learning more about topics you might already know something about, which is makes it a really good show that people should watch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Especially sort of growing it up from the original show, which was kind of like, hey, how do we teach kids in the 90s when,
yeah,
you know, grunge music and electronic music and all this is crazy, as well as all the effects and shit they did.
Yeah.
Just trying to watch now, it's like, god damn, this is annoying as hell.
Yeah.
But
then again, you've also got to remember that that was made for a different audience.
That was made for me back then.
Yeah.
And I was like, I wouldn't be able to stand that anymore.
Yeah. I mean, if it was for you back then, I mean, you would, it's, if you're, yeah, if you were, you know, that show was made for little kids, which is why, yeah, it was so effective.
It was made for us in the 90s when people didn't have any sense of how to tone things down.
Yeah.
Especially when it came to kids' shows. You had to be over the top all the time. Because that's what old people thought young people wanted.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. As for games, been playing a lot of Zelda. I've gotten the second dungeon done, or not done, opened up. It's the dude that's in the desert. I forget what it's called. Naboris. I got that all opened up as I figured out how to get into the town, which was interesting. As you have, as they ban all men from the town.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm sure is great for the sort of people that are afraid of women empowerment.
Yep.
So you have to find a specific outfit
Yeah, I remember that.
That sort of hides the fact that you're a boy.
And, yeah.
That they let you in. Those some people figure out you're a boy, and they're like, I'm not going to tell anybody. Like, well, it's great for everybody else that's afraid of boys. I don't know why they're particularly afraid of them, but it was pretty cool. Also kind of trying to go around and get more of the towers. I think I just have one left. Getting the one that was in the southwest corner, not the desert area, but basically the snow-capped area.
Yeah.
I basically started with it probably being right behind me and went kind of in a big circle around the whole area.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, this is – you can see the other tower right next to it pretty much. Mm. It's not that far. I was like, how the hell did I not see this? But I ended up doing a lot of stuff there. Doing more of the shrines and such. Got my health up pretty good. And yeah, just kind of doing more stuff with that game as I slowly make this trek. I also found Hestus again. I was hanging out near another stable. And promptly upgraded my weapon inventory and my bow inventory. Not my shields, because he ran off before I could do my shields, but yeah. Now I need to figure out where the hell he's at now. as for other games, I've been playing more MLB 17. I finished the first season with my pitcher. Everything seems to be good on the second season so far, as I am in the rotation. I'm staying where I'm at. With my first baseman, I was playing more of that. And much like with my pitcher, I got asked to move to another position. Moved out to left field, which is a big change, especially because the camera is terrible in outfield when you're focused on one player. Because when the ball gets hit up in the air, it's not an automatic that it's going to tell you exactly where the ball went. So oftentimes I run in the wrong direction, and the camera's like, oh, it's over here. It's like, well, that'd be great if you told me it was over there. Then they rate you on defense on fielding in terms of, like, response. So sometimes I get, like, bad response. It's like, that's because you didn't show me where I'm supposed to go. And being in the outfield, I see almost every time that somebody hits a home run. It makes me watch it go out. And it's like, okay, our pitchers are terrible. I can obviously turn off all the fielding altogether, but I kind of don't want to. So now I am spending a lot of my points on fielding and arm strength and all that sort of stuff. But, it was interesting to make that switch and, like, fuck up so much with errors. Because if you don't go to fly balls in the right way, I've had it just hit me in the head or just fly out of the glove or just not get even close to catching it or things like that, which is it's fun because it's not all that same to the first baseman who pretty much most of my fielding attempts was either me just running back to first to catch a throw to my way or be having to, like, dive for a ball. There's really not much, which is part of the reason why I picked first base. It's the easiest way to get free points. Now, outfield, I gotta actually do stuff. which is interesting. And supposedly it's gonna get me to potentially move up faster, which didn't really happen in my pitcher. And much like my pitcher, my guy is he was until like the last game or two, had the highest batting average, hits, and I'm near the top on RBIs. I just started hitting home runs, so that's good. Then I realized I could hit square or circle, or square particularly, for like a power hit, which is like the point where in like a fighting game where you know more things than you should. And you're like just trying more and just fucking up because you know more about what you can do instead of just going simple with the things that work. So that's what's been happening with me. It's like, I can hit for power, then I don't know if that's why I'm fucking up so much.
Mm.
I just hit screw and just start swinging, because if you just hit good enough, you'll hit home runs. I also found it interesting the Twitter feed. So they have like a variety of body sizes, I guess, that you can put your player at, and so I put it like a husky, I think. And then I started seeing somebody on there. It's like, I saw a picture of this guy without a shirt on. Get in the weight room. It's like, what the fuck? There's body shaming in this now? What the fuck? So that was a weird thing to see. Seems like a good thing that the team should probably take out. Because that's sort of shitty attitude. It's like, man, fuck that guy.
Hmm.
That guy's a piece of shit. It's already got enough of like assholes who are like, they're just doing like typical like sports team stuff. It's like, oh, don't tell me about that team. They're beating mine. I don't know. That sort of stuff.
Mm.
Which, being on the team that's the worst in the league, is means I never see that stuff. Unless you see like weird moments where it's like the fourth place team is like somehow jealous of the last place team. Doesn't really make sense in some of the Twitter stuff.
Mm.
But it's weird. And the other game I've been playing a lot is Skyforce Anniversary.
Mm.
The shooter that basically is so far a big mobile game that I can tell just because it's all about grinding.
Yeah.
I am slowly improving my stats so I can do better and get further. And I found out there's a third difficulty. Same metal stuff as before, like 70% of the enemies, 100%, save all the humans and get through without any hits.
Hmm.
So I got that unlocked on the first level. I haven't gotten to it on any of the others, and it's pretty hard.
Hmm.
They just unlocked. They have tournaments on weekends, which I don't really understand the tournament part of it. It seems like just like a weekend like high score thing. And I don't see any leaderboards attached to it, as far as I could tell. It's like I just played it and died halfway through because it's pretty hard. And I don't know what the community part of that is, or maybe I'm the only person that's playing it. I don't know. That could be a complete possibility.
Yeah.
Because I don't see that many people playing it. Which is fun on those leaderboard sort of games where you can see, like, oh, there's, like, four or five people on it on the first level. There's four on the second. And it just gets less and less.
Mm.
Which I was seeing that with Dangerous Golf, seeing who was still sticking around. It's like, oh, Phil's the only one that has scores on these levels now. And they're not very good scores, so I know he didn't try that hard. Like, he just beat it and just moved
Shots
on.
Shots fired.
Well, they're hard levels, some of them. It's like, yeah. Oh, you can't hit the red parts of this floor because you'll get counted out. Or you'll get... Because if you hit, like, some of the levels have, this thing is off limits. Mm-hmm. If you hit that, or if you don't sink your putt, you lose half your score.
Mm.
So at a certain point, I could tell, oh, he just took the half score and got out of here. Yeah. If I do it well enough, I get, like, twice the score. So it's like he either just stunk it up, or he just took the half score and said, screw it, I'm going to the next level.
Yeah,
because sometimes you sit there try him over and over again, and it just gets annoying.
Yep.
You're like, fuck it, I'm just going to finish this, get the hell out of here, because it's pissing me off.
Yeah. I wanted to see more of the levels that they have. You know, I didn't want to stay on one too long.
Yeah, there's one I managed to get onto the roof of the gas station somehow. Because I bounced the ball. It was from inside. So I bounced the ball and somehow got through the roof. I think there were like glass on the roof, so I wanted to see if I could hit it and break it, and so I get points that way. And I went through it onto the roof, and I was like, "Well, there's skylights over here. I'll see if I can break through." And it's like out of bounds. Game over. It's like, well, I guess I wasn't supposed to be up there after all. I don't know how I was able to get up there, but. Yeah. As I've found, that game's got a few issues.
Yeah, it's got some
bugs. Kind of in a fun way, though.
Mm.
Like, there's no way I should be causing these explosions just flying out of the level. But Yeah, that's been pretty much it. So how about you, Brandon?
All right. Well, first of all, Persona 5. And I just finished the fifth dungeon last night. So I am, as far as the main story is concerned, I'm pretty sure I'm on the... I'm heading towards the finish line. But keep in mind also that that's only the five, like, official palaces.
Yeah.
Supposedly there's, like, six of them in total, but the thing is that after you finish the sixth one, you still have to deal with, like, the main boss and, like, all the other stuff. Remember, it's a Persona game, so stuff goes really weird, usually, towards the end.
Yeah, I'm sure there's some story decisions you could just, like, end it right now, or you can keep it going to the true ending.
Yeah.
That's what Persona 4 had, where it's like, oh, you could just say this guy did it, and then it just kind of ends after that. And you don't get the true ending because you just convicted the wrong guy.
Yeah.
And then you do eventually get the true ending, and you find out why it abruptly ended.
Yeah. But, yeah, so one of the neat things about that game I found out, I've discovered is, okay, so you know your character, he's living in that cafe in that back alley in Tokyo. And in that back alley, there's a couple of different establishments. There's a medical clinic, a bat, batting cages, a supermarket, etc. There's also a thrift store. And at sort of midpoint through the game, you can actually buy an old, they don't call it, but it's basically an old Famicom. And one of the things you can do is you can go out and buy old vintage games for this particular system. And basically all of them are like sort of representatives of like really popular Famicom games back in the day that, you know, aren't Mario related. So like there's one that's like based on, pretty sure it's based on Gradius. I mean, one of those billions of space shooters that came out. So like, you know,
was it side scrolling or top down?
Doesn't tell you.
Okay. It's just like, hey, you got this.
Oh, you don't actually play it.
Well, yes and no. You do quote unquote play it, but it's not a visual thing. It's more of like a rhythm.
It just says you played this.
No, it just says like okay, you're here. Now you need to press the X button a certain amount of times before the time runs out.
Oh, it's just a mini game.
Yeah, basically. But it's everything, like, one of them's a shooter that's basically based off one of the millions of shooters. There's one called Punch Out, which is obviously Punch Out.
Yeah.
The last guy you fight in there is called Mike Bryson.
Nice.
There's one called Gambler Goemon, which is basically a sort of gambling... based around Goemon. And I'm pretty sure that that is sort of a small fuck you to Konami, because Goemon was a big Konami property.
Yeah.
See, there's also... Oh, God, there's one called Train of Life, which is based on that... God, I can't even remember what it's called now, but it's that... It's that sort of similar to Fortune Street, except it's based around trains and stuff like that. It was a Sunsoft property for a long time. I am trying my best to remember what it was.
No, I know the one you're talking about, too.
You know what? Screw it. I need to find what it is, because otherwise I'm going to freaking lose my mind. Okay.
I guess while you're looking that up.
No. Momotaro Densetsu. That's what it was. What it was called. Yeah, by Akira Sakuma.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what it's called. And there's one of that. It's really fun. And one of the things is that once you beat these games, you know, two things happen. You improve one of your one of your attributes, you know, your kindness or your guts or your, you know, stuff like that. And then after that, yeah, and then you can take, because the all these games come with their own manuals, and when you finish a game, you can take, you write down the pass, the character writes down the password at the end of the game, he takes the, on the coupon, and then later on in the game, you can go to Akihabara and go to an old game store and get a special item.
Hmm.
And also buy more games.
Yeah.
So.
Nice.
Yeah.
More stuff you can spend your in-game money on.
Yeah. There's also like a Krang game in there that can, so you can get a little Jack Frost plushie.
Naturally.
Oh, yeah. But man, it's a, it is an addictive game. It is a lot of fun. Hmm. It has earned all of its accolades. It really has. And so let's see. Other than that, well, I've been indulging my love of cheesy old school movies. Especially, I really love like cheesy, schlocky 80s action movies. And I don't mean like the big famous ones like, you know, Terminator or anything. I mean like the really like B niche ones like freaking Stone Cold and Megaforce. And but I found my absolute favorite, which is this really cheesy martial arts action movie from, I believe it was made around 1985. It's called The Miami Connection. It's really hard to describe this movie, but basically it was created by this guy named, it was a Korean action flick that was made for an American audience. It was written and directed by, it was directed by what was then a very famous Korean filmmaker named Richard Park, and it was a co-made with a, who was at the time a very popular Taekwondo instructor in Florida named YK Kim. And the thing is, the movie only got a limited release when it was first made, when it was first released. Specifically in, I think it was filmed in 1985, but it didn't really get released until around 1988, and mostly in and around Central Florida. And because they didn't release this thing to the world because it's a piece of shit. But it is a gloriously cheesy and earnest piece of shit.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. It's basically about a drug deal, a group of drug dealers led by a group of motorcycle riding ninjas in the middle of Florida.
What the actual fuck?
Yeah, and one of the members of this gang that's led by this group is a guy named Jeff, and he goes to this club, and we meet the heroes of this story, which is a Taekwondo practicing rock band called Dragon Sound.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay, just quick question. Have any of you guys played, Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon?
Blood Dragon.
Yeah, you know that?
That's what I was suddenly feeling from this.
Yeah, you know that song, Friends? You know, Friends to Eternity, Loyalty on that song?
Yeah.
The soundtrack? Yeah, that's where this comes from.
Okay.
It's a Dragon Sound song. And the funny thing, they're playing this live at this club, and YK Kim, of course, is in the band, but he obviously can't play the guitar, so he's trying his best to fake it.
Okay.
Yeah. It is the most... there are a lot of movies I could point to and say that this is the most 80s thing on the planet, but this one takes the cake. Because this movie, its whole... music, it has a completely original soundtrack, and most of it is by Dragon Sound. nobody in this freaking movie can act. There's this dude who's named the guy who's the keyboardist for Dragon Sound, a guy named Mari Jim, who's played by a half Korean, half African American man named Mari Smith. There's a subplot where he discovers where his father is, and who his father is, because his and there's this like this weird thing where, you know, they're all talking because they all live in the same house because they're all going to college at the University of Central Florida. And he finds out that he has that his father. And here's the thing. YK Kim, you know, who's playing Mark. Yes, that's his actual name in the movie. He's like, "This is your father? I didn't know you had a father. I thought we were all pants." YK Kim barely speaks English, is what I'm trying to.
Yeah.
If you get a chance, watch it. It is amazing, and just it is completely incompetent, and yet it is just so much. It's so earnest and so. It's a lot of fun to watch.
All right.
You know, and it's funny because it eventually had a proper DVD release in 2012, and it became a big cult hit, and it took a couple of years before YK Kim himself would come and, you know, do interviews and attend viewings because he kind of thought the whole thing was a mistake. And wasn't exactly proud of the fact that he was associated with that movie, but he's kind of just learned to go with it. Yeah. I think my favorite part was the South Florida Sun Sentinel basically wrote, "For lack of a better synopsis, Miami Connection is a cocaine war rock ninja motorcycle gang film with aspirations of being an action adventure musical." And that YK Kim simply cannot talk. Okay. The title of the review by Jay Boyar of the Orlando Sentinel was, "If you can't say something nice." As of right now, it currently has a score of 71% at Rotten Tomatoes. So it's actually gotten better reviews after it got re-released.
But are they being ironic?
Mm-hmm. Maybe. I'll have to track down a copy of this because this sounds amazing.
Yeah, but like you know, YK Kim is now is a good sport about it now. He's pretty, you know, so yeah. If you ever get a chance to watch it, go ahead and watch it. Okay, and also of course, as usual, I'm trolling neo-Nazis on the interwebs because it's fun.
This is what you do.
Yeah.
Everyone
needs a hobby.
Yeah, and. Every so often, I often get into tussles with neo-Confederates as well.
Oh.
Yeah, those are fun. Because you find out really quickly that, God, a lot of these idiots don't know what the hell they're talking about.
Hmm.
Like, they really do not.
No.
You know, they read a Thomas DiLorenzo book and they thought they knew everything they needed to know about Abraham Lincoln and the Civil War.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's fun. It's a lot of fun. Because, see, the fun part about there is that when you know all the facts, it's like, it's essentially taking candy from a baby.
Hmm.
But, and it is kinda, but damn, that candy is sweet and that baby's a little asshole. So.
Okay.
So that's what I've been up to this week. Has anybody got anything else they wanted to add?
No, I think I'm good.
I think there's one thing I wanted to mention about the Zelda stuff.
Yeah.
In opening up that boss, I dealt with the Yiga clan,
which
was like the most Naruto thing I've ever seen in a long time, because one of the big things you do is it's a big stealth section. And apparently this clan loves bananas.
Oh, yeah, they do.
So you have to drop bananas. Some of them are up on perches that you just shoot a support beam and it drops them on the ground. They have just the fucking dumbest, like, walking animation over to it. Almost kind of like they got this, like, gleeful hop they're doing as they're, like, hopping over there. And then when I beat the boss, it was just it was combining, like, the Zelda, oh, it's just, you know, three hits and he's dead sort of thing, but with a supposed mastermind of a ninja clan that is so easily beaten over stupid things. Yeah. Like, you beat him, it's like, oh, I'm just going to bring this big metal spike ball to take you out, and then it just slowly rolls at him. Takes him
out.
That's
the crazy thing about it. Like, their leader is an incompetent putz, but their grunts,
they fuck you up.
Yeah.
If you get caught once, they just destroy you.
They will destroy your valuables.
That's the first thing I did, is I tried to shoot one in the back of the head, and it's like, oh, it just took 1/10 of his health. That's unlike every other enemy I've faced so far. And it's, so then you have to actually sneak around. It's like, okay. Yeah. They don't let you save midway, so it's, you have to be extremely careful.
Yeah.
Which was a big change of pace, considering the stealth is not great in the rest of that game.
Yeah.
Mm.
But you just drop bananas and they're easy to beat. Yeah. It was just something I was not expecting at all in that game.
Yep.
I found out why they drop bananas every time you beat one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, also for the Bill Nye stuff, whenever they talk about some big new term, they actually put up a definition of it on the screen.
Yep.
Which is really cool.
Yeah.
Way to just not necessarily just talk over your heads with terms and such.
Yeah.
That you might not know. Just like, yeah, here's this thing we're talking about, and here's what it means, just in case you need to know.
Yep.
Which is great.
Yeah.
Yep. Awesome. All right. So with that, it is now time for everybody's favorite segment of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And I'm going to be honest with you. This isn't really going to be a long one, nor is it going to be necessarily something that a lot of people necessarily don't know, but I consider it a public service announcement because there's far too many idiots who believe this. So I'm just going to go ahead and do that this week. People, all the folks who are listening to us, I want you to know this. In the United States, there were no Irish slaves. Okay? Now, I know some of you are out there and thinking, what? What the hell are you talking about? We know there were no Irish slaves. There were black slaves. I was like, yes. But there has been this myth, this meme going around that in the United States, before we had, you know, African chattel slavery, we had Irish slavery. Now, you can take a wild guess at the type of people who like to spread this little meme.
The people that talk about how the Lincoln was the champion of the Republicans, not the Democrats.
Yeah. So I'm just going to go ahead and say it. First of all, they were not slaves. We had Irish indentured servants. Now, that's bad enough on its own. And a lot of them especially were in penal colonies like my home state of Georgia. Little known fact, that's kind of what my state used to be. We really are sort of the Australia of the South. But no. Indentured servants, bad enough on its own, but there's a big difference between that and slavery. The big difference being that indentured servants actually had rights and liberties that they could sue for.
Yeah.
They could actually get legal representation. Now, keep in mind, because they were indentured servants, they were usually convicted criminals and therefore were carrying out their sentence. But even then, they still had rights and could get a hold of an attorney. Slaves didn't have any rights. They had no say in where they lived, how they lived, what they did, what they could and couldn't do. They had none. They were literally property. Human property. Hmm. Indentured servants were basically the closest thing you could put them to now as like a modern day chain gang.
Hmm.
But, you know, even worse.
Yeah.
And even then, still not the same.
Yeah.
Now, the reason people make this meme is because they somehow want to downplay the reality of slavery on the African-American population and the long systematic and generational effects it's had on that demographic all these years later.
Yeah.
They want to make it out like somehow, you know, black people did either one, black people didn't have it so bad, or is that, yeah, they had it bad, but guess what? There were white folks had it bad too. Stupid crap like that. So I will make it clear once again, there were no Irish slaves. Period.
Good.
And that has been yet another episode of Brandon's Random Factoid.
Great.
Join us next week when I talk about the causes of the Civil War.
There was slavery.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a certain degree of just real stupidity and just blatant disregard for the facts that gets to you.
Yeah.
So. But anyway, so we're going to start off, as always, with our assholes of the week. And this week, it was an alt-right rally in Berkeley. Because of course they would choose frickin' Berkeley to have their little rally.
Hmm.
All right, Chris, take us away.
So yeah, on the day that this happened, last Saturday? This was tax day. Hmm. The yep. tax day marches were happening in many other parts of the country, and it seems like a large group of alt-right people basically said, hey, we should all gather up in Berkeley.
Yeah.
And
now, I want to just also dispel a myth here. People were there were parts of the media saying that this was a pro-Trump rally, which is true. But the thing is that we're not specifically talking about that entire rally, but a part of it that was specifically related to the alt-right and neo-Nazis.
Yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't – it kept being portrayed as like pro-Trump versus anti-Trump. It's like
– Yeah, that's not what happened.
Alt-right versus anybody else that decided they shouldn't be able to start shit.
Like anti-fascist, in other words. Yeah. Antifa.
Hmm.
Yeah, so basically they decided we're going to descend on Berkeley, the hippie capital of California.
Mm-hmm.
Very much well known as a liberal place.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them came to it in bulletproof armor, body armor, helmets, all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Other pictures of people doing the Nazi salute.
Oh, yeah, there was a few of those.
And all of that sort of stuff.
There was that one dumbass wearing a Roman helmet.
Yeah. Yeah, they got pictures of him here, you know, with the Make America Great Again flags draped around his capes, all that sort of stuff.
And we want to make it again. When we're talking about people doing the Nazi salute, we're not doing that rhetorically. We're talking out and out, honest to God, neo-Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
Doing it in front of cameras specifically so people see this.
Yes, and they've got the symbols, they've got the hand signals, the rhetoric. It's one of those, like, if it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck.
It's a Nazi.
It better be a duck, or it's the stupidest thing in the world.
Yeah.
So, a bunch of people got arrested. It says here 21 people were arrested, 11 people were injured. There are pictures of dudes in, like, biker gear, leather jackets with just folding knives stuck out in their fingerless gloves and shit like this.
Mm-hmm.
So you get the idea of the sort of people. There was a good person on Twitter that was basically just talking to all these people, not trying to at least outwardly show that they were mocking them.
Mm-hmm.
But just trying to get video, just talk to them, see why they were there, all that sort of stuff. And there's one kid that came in from Colorado.
Mm-hmm.
And he was basically like, oh, I'm here because to protect the First Amendment rights, the free speech,
mm-hmm.
and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, reasonable ideas, not the best place to be as far as reasonable things to do.
Yeah.
And, yeah, just the sort of chaos happened that you would expect. They called it Patriots Day is what they mm-hmm. were trying to present,
mm.
sort of fighting the left, the liberals, whatever stupid names they would come up with.
Mm-hmm.
All
the SJWs,
of, yeah.
cultural Marxism, blah, 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 blah.
Yep. Yeah, just a great field day for a bunch of terrific people
mm-hmm.
to cause shit in a place where, you know what? Nobody should really have to deal with that sort of shit.
No. But so here's the thing. It's basically what happened was, I'm trying to, has anybody found out what started the whole, like the actual violence?
I don't know.
But basically it was like freaking holy shit. We're talking straight. I mean, it got knockdown, drag out, holy shit type stuff.
Yeah. Lots of tear gas used by the cops to try to control these people.
Yeah. It got serious, man.
Of course, people had gas masks.
Mm-hmm.
You don't bring gas masks to a demonstration unless you're trying to start shit.
Yeah. Yeah. But basically it was, again, it was not pro-Trump versus anti-Trump. It was neo-Nazis versus anti-fascists.
Yeah.
Keep in mind that most anti-fascist groups have a policy of always going on the defensive instead of the offensive. So there's a pretty good chance that what happened is one of these neo-Nazi shitheads punch someone. We do know that there's that video of that one douchebag sucker punching a woman.
Yeah, that's in the article. It's linked.
Mm-hmm. Guess who else was also there? Phil, you probably know who this. A woman by the name of Laura Southern.
Mm. Rings a bell, yeah.
yeah, she's with the Rebel Media. Mm. Which is kind of like Canada's version of The Blaze.
Yeah.
Laura Southern is infamous for going to like these anti-fascist rallies and basically starting shit.
Yeah.
So that she can then go around and try and play the victim.
Yeah.
And the thing is now is that most Antifa groups have caught wise to her. So now she's making it like, well, they obviously don't want to talk to me. They must be hiding something.
Hmm. Yeah, nobody's really buying her crap anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, this douchebag right here.
Hmm.
Covered in tattoos with the American flag pants.
Hmm.
Yeah.
And here's a guy in almost a full military attire.
Hmm.
Maybe it'll be ex-military.
Mm-hmm.
Just a wonderful,
like I said, this shit's getting ugly.
Yeah.
Pretty sure he was with the Oath Keepers.
Hmm.
One of those dudes.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is the one in particular. The guy with the... You can't really see it, but that little makeshift shield that he's got down there is the Black Sun symbol.
Hmm.
Okay.
Which is basically like a swastika with like eight arms to form a sun.
Like three skateboard decks.
Hmm.
Yeah. Or snowboards. But, yeah, so those were our assholes of the week, and they showed themselves to be
assholes. Yeah.
Quite the assholes.
Yeah.
Fortunately, however, we do have our heroes of the week.
Mm.
And the first one is a gentleman by the name of Steve Ballmer.
Yeah, who, former Microsoft CEO.
Mm-hmm.
And now
who is
owner of LA Clippers.
Yep, who has put up a site/database who tracks government spending. You say, what do you mean by that? It means he not only tracks how much they spend, but where it's going to.
Yeah.
Which is and it's all in real time.
Yep.
As well as a bunch of other information as well.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Like showing like college graduation rate, how that's changed.
Mm-hmm.
Gross domestic product and arrests in the country. Like all the stuff you can search for all of it with your financial data, demographic stuff. Also, it's a really cool data. The website URL is usafacts.org.
Yep.
And yeah, it's sort of the perfect person to sort of headline this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
As they talk about in this article, like he's so rich that he can just pay the couple million it might take to just maintain all this information in the site and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have to worry about it.
Yeah.
Just put the right people in charge to keep it going. And talks about how it came to be is, like, he thought that he's paying these millions of dollars in taxes every year, and it's obviously going to create some sort of safety net for the less fortunate people.
Mm-hmm.
Finding out, oh, no, it doesn't.
Mm.
Like, wondering, well, where the hell does all the money go? And,
yeah.
Hey, maybe we should create this thing, because nobody really tracks that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's good. And now...
Hey, it's a rich white guy that's trying to do something good for people.
Yeah. Yeah.
For one. There are a few of those.
Yeah.
You got to give him that much credit.
Hey, even though he's conservative, he still has ideas of doing something good for people.
Yeah.
Yep.
So on top of that, we have our other hero of the week, which is the United Nations, who will be releasing all of their files on the Holocaust to the public this week.
Like I said, in terms of PDF, it's about 900 gigs of files.
It's all the information that they have.
Yeah.
And it's all of it's going to be there. You can actively
see it. Some of these PDF files are more than 2,000 pages worth of information, but it's basically every bit of information they got when they were founded, information they got it was collected beforehand. They talk about the guy who founded the library.
Mm-hmm.
This is mainly head up in the Alfred Wiener.
Mm-hmm.
1934, he started monitoring Nazis.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of right before this, World War II started, he shipped all the data he had to London to be kept safe with the British government.
Yeah.
That eventually made it to here.
Yeah. So you're going to see... Everything here, we got like all types of paperwork, you know, files for paperwork from, you know, the actual Nazi government itself, legal documents from the Nuremberg trials, some of the first demands for some of the first words and demands that's the first news coming from various people outside in the U.S. and outside and places like Poland and China. Of Jewish persecution and of the Holocaust.
Yeah, a lot of information from the Polish government they tracked.
Remember that the most infamous of all the concentration camps is located in Poland.
Yep.
Auschwitz.
Yeah.
Yep. And it mentioned
Dachau,
things like,
I think, as well. But
yeah, like a charge sheet from April 1944 mentioning victims being forced to strip off clothing.
Mm-hmm.
How the, quote, the terracotta floors in the chambers became very slippery when wet.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
They definitely suggest that this information has the potential to change the history books and provide more information on everything that went on.
Yeah.
That will essentially change what we thought happened.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. It also does... send a message to the like Holocaust deniers to be like, hey, deny this.
Yeah.
Deny 900 gigs of data.
Yeah, and we're talking, this is like, these aren't like types, these are like actual like scanned documents, right?
Yeah, documents they found, lots of testimony and various other bits of data that they...
I'm guessing there's some photographs in here too, right?
I would assume so. Mm-hmm. Lots of that stuff. It's supposed to be putting all this stuff up in the the Wiener Library in Amsterdam, as well as a library in London, and also putting all of it online. But this doesn't mention when specifically. It just said this week. I would assume it's up by now, but it's not. Any sort of update on this?
Yeah. It says here some of the earliest files of evidence were collected to indict Adolf Hitler directly for his role in the coordinating and controlling massacres carried out by Nazi units in Czechoslovakia. So I'm guessing that shit's from like the late 30s.
Yeah,
remember the U.S. didn't enter World War II until 1941. So the UN is doing a great service to humanity here by releasing all of these documents. It'll finally be here. Everyone can look at it and peruse it on a whim. I would not be surprised if a special particular website is made to give like a search engine and stuff.
Yeah, they definitely mention catalog putting that sort of thing in there. A catalog that can be searched online.
Yeah.
I'm glad, because as much as I hate to admit it, Holocaust denial has become more popular than ever in the last couple of years.
Yeah.
Like, it's become a friggin' meme. And
it's like those sorts of people are in power now.
Yeah. And this is one of those things where you can just point to all this and just say, yeah, deny this, fucker. Like, this shit is right here in front of your eyes.
But, yeah, they definitely have tools, I think, to if you are Jewish and your family history is fuzzy around that period, they potentially have tools to help you maybe track down family lines in there.
Oh, yeah.
So that's even just great things that can happen beyond just the terrible stuff that happened.
Yeah.
Because I know I've seen counts of people that didn't even know they were Jewish because, you know, their grandfather passed away in one of the camps, and their immediate family did not know about that. Like their particular heritage or whatever that is, sort of thing. Yeah. And so they found out when they found out about that particular stuff. It's like, oh, we're Jewish, too. Oh.
Okay.
Hey.
Yeah. Anyway, it's somber stuff, but holy crap, does the world need it.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, well, on to the news proper. And it's based in my home state. So there was this special election that was meant to replace the congressional seat that Tom Price left after he became had his part in the Trump administration. And there was a special election, and it kind of floored everyone because this was a deeply, deeply conservative part of Georgia. Remember, again, this was Tom Price's district.
Yeah.
And
yeah, I think Obama lost it in his last election by 23 points, like that. Huge, but Hillary only lost it by 1.5.
Yeah. So they had their special election, and it's going to go into a runoff because, unfortunately, no one made the 50% plus finish line. But John Ossoff, who is around my age,
he's 30.
Yeah, he's a documentary filmmaker. He ran for that particular district. And he ended up getting 48.6% of the vote, which is the majority, but because it didn't go over 50, it has to go into a runoff.
Yeah,
because
the Republicans had like a dozen people, like a crazy amount of people.
11.
Yeah.
There was 11 of them.
Like two Democrats, 11 Republicans, like two independent or something like that. It's like, well, no wonder nobody got 50 when you have a dozen people on the other side, pretty much all running for whatever sliver. Almost like their point was to take away as much percent as they can from the other side.
Yeah.
And that was pretty amazing. I mean, I'm guessing it shows a tide is turning.
Yeah.
Yeah, if he nearly won it outright.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like
Kansas had their own special election recently that was much, much closer than it was during the election. Seems like all the stupid shit Trump is doing is affecting all of the people and Republicans.
Yeah. Unfortunately, John Ossoff is kind of a middle-of-the-road Democrat.
Yeah.
He does not support single-payer health care, which is the reason why Bernie didn't campaign for him. But he still did really well.
Yeah.
Also, and I bet Pat's oh so happy about this one.
I know where this
Utah's Jason Chavitz has announced that he not only is he not running for re-election in 2018, but that he might actually not finish his current term.
That'll be too soon, or not soon enough, really. I mean,
yeah. So
yeah, they told him to do his job, and he decided to retire instead.
Yeah.
Which makes you wonder who's got what on him.
Yeah, that's what a lot of it was like. Did they get dirt on this guy? Because it is kind of sudden.
Yeah.
I want everybody to remember, this guy was like the Benghazi warrior.
Yeah.
He was the anti-Obama warrior while he was in Congress. Yeah. He's technically he's still in it, but not for much longer.
Yeah, he says there's no ulterior motives to this move. And he is pretty sure he would get reelected by an overwhelming amount.
Yeah, those town halls would paint a different picture.
Yeah.
It looks like, but everybody knows, of course, he campaigned heavily for Trump.
Yeah.
And
I'm just going to pass this along. And hopefully yeah, the link works.
But more than likely, he is going to. Yeah, so here we go. Oh, yeah.
Jason Chaffetz is quitting. Why?
Place your bets.
Yeah.
You know, like, did he voted for Hillary? Maybe he had an affair with a goat or a woman or a man.
All of these
He's
are...
afraid of his own constituents. He's stealing money, Russian blackmail. Absolutely voted to cut funding of embassy security.
There's no picture here where he looks
set up as a political trap.
Mm-hmm.
There's no picture here of him where he doesn't look like a dumbass.
Yeah.
Yeah. He looks perpetually surprised. Yeah.
He's going to have to change his Twitter handle, which is Jason in the House. I think so many jokes here are shit. He's either going to have to become a lot more fun at parties or change his Twitter handle.
Oh, Lord.
Or is he going to have to change his Jason out the house?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jason kicked out of the house.
Yeah. So, but we can end this part on a positive note. In my home state of Georgia, Georgia has now joined Seattle, Washington, in that it now has a person on its city council that is an avowed socialist.
Hmm.
In my home state of Georgia.
Yep.
I would ask what's not positive about Chaffetz showing himself the door, but...
Yeah.
Well, this. The So his name is Khalid Kamau. He's a Black Lives Matter activist. And he won a city council seat in South Fulton, which is a newly incorporated municipality outside of Atlanta.
Okay.
He is of a Yoruban African ancestry, which is why if you ever see his name, a lot of times it'll be written in lowercase, because that's sort of a tradition. He was a co-founder of Black Lives Matter Atlanta. He was a national convention delegate for Bernie Sanders at the DNC. And he defeated his opponent, Charlene Parks, 67-33.
That's statistically significant, as yep. they would say.
Yep. Wow. That's pretty amazing. And in my home state, too.
Yeah.
But I can tell you that on the one hand, it's surprising, but on the other hand, it's kind of not, because Georgia's demographics have been changing pretty rapidly in the last decade, and I kind of wish Lee was here because he could have backed me up on this. In Georgia, the African-American population has essentially dwarfed the white population. And, of course, the Latino population has been growing pretty rapidly as well. So really, it's the demographics have changed. But it's good. I'm glad that it's happening, that, you know, this type of thing's spreading. I would expect to see more guys like him eventually make their way to Congress. Maybe one of them will even get elected president. You can hope. But it's a really definite sign that, man, the tide is really turning. Because it wasn't but a few years ago that if you were somehow, you know, labeled with the word socialist, it was basically political poison. That came up
that on Obama.
Yeah. And then I guess after Bernie, you know, decided to run and he got such a massive outpouring of support, it just
stopped being a dirty word.
Bernie has irrevocably destroyed the socialism taboo in the United States. That genie is out of the box, that cat is out of the bag, and they're never going back in. And, you know, social democracy is now becoming a real phenomenon in the United States. But it's going to be interesting in the coming, you know, in the coming, especially even the coming year, especially when 2018 rolls around.
And midterms start to
become seeing thing. How the demographics change. And how, you know, that the effect that Bernie has had, because, you know, we already have this now. This one guy who won city council seat in South Fulton. And, yeah, it's a city council seat. It's just city council. But he won it in South Fulton and completely trounced his opposition by over twice the amount that the opposition got. So... That's fascinating. Oh, and another happy news. So after 20 plus years of being on Fox News, Bill O'Reilly has been shit canned by the Murdochs. It could not have come fast enough.
Is it possible that maybe the Murdochs want to make Fox News into something reputable?
Well, it's I think from what I've heard, Murdoch's kids have taken over more of the network ever since Roger Ailes was, booted from his position as CEO, as president. So I think they're trying to clean house a little bit. But there's also another major thing, which is I think, as a lot of people know by now, this all came about because of the massive settlement that he and Fox News had to make with a bunch of people who had accused Bill O'Reilly of sexual harassment. And we're talking dozens, like 15 different women of all races and ages. And we ended up, you know, we got all of what it was and just the sheer amount of, like, everything from, like, him calling them in the middle of the night and masturbating. Just real creeper shit. You know, saying that he was going to help them with a business opportunity to go up the ranks in Fox and then hitting on them. And when they would revoke his sexual advances, he would basically turn around and all vindictive-like and say, all right, well, you're never working in this town again. And the settlement that they reached was like in the tens of millions of dollars. And once that got out, the advertisers fled in droves.
Yep. That's probably the bigger issue, is not getting any money for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So basically what happened is the Murdochs really just realized that he was toxic for the brand, and they just cut him loose. Keep in mind, however, this is only now happening. This didn't happen with all the racism and the lying and all the other shit he was accused of.
Because then he was just feeding more red meat to the base.
Mm-hmm.
When he starts costing the network money, well.
Yep.
But here's the thing that that's the interesting part. Bill O'Reilly was their top attraction on that network. He was one of the biggest names in cable news, cable television, period.
Yeah.
Now, granted, but here's the problem. The average age of his viewership was, I believe, around 71.
They're older than he is.
Yeah, older than he was. And there, it is more than likely he is not going to get hired by another network anytime soon. So his only recourse is to either keep, you know, up his little writing career, which itself will probably also take a major hit. Or he can go and do what Glenn Beck did, which is found his own network online. Here's the problem. O'Reilly's viewership, like I said, is usually around 71.
They typically don't watch stuff online.
Exactly.
They'll just find somebody else to put in that slot.
Yeah.
They said it's going to be Tucker Carlson.
Yep.
Oh, well. Oh, well, couldn't have happened to a nicer guy, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to hear the dumb Trump thing that just happened?
Oh, God. Go ahead. Go ahead.
So,
we got breaking news.
Remember
here.
When he signed the 100-day contract he was doing with the American people?
Mm-hmm.
On his Twitter, no matter how much I accomplished during the ridiculous standard of the first 100 days, it has been a lot, including SC. Media will kill. He's criticizing his own 100-day contract that he himself signed and made.
Donald can't
make a good deal with himself.
That's the president.
Mm-hmm.
That's the level of...
I really am convinced now that he is suffering from dementia.
Yeah.
Did you see when he signed the hat for the kid at the Easter thing?
Yeah, and then threw it
into the crowd? Like you've forgotten the instance of signing it, where it came from.
Yeah.
I think he did it twice, too.
Yeah.
I think he signed another hat after that and just tossed it right into the crowd. That's a great lesson for the kid, though.
Yeah.
Never expect anything good to happen.
Yeah. And speaking of dumbasses.
Oh, yeah. One of Donald Trump's favorite people, actually. Yeah. Alex Jones is going through a really nasty divorce proceedings with his ex-wife.
It's just custodial?
It's part of it.
Yeah.
And it's particularly custody battle with his kids. And the thing is, before I go forward, I want to make clear, I don't know if any of you guys have ever had family or friends who ever had to go through divorce proceedings and custody
shit.
I've been
through that shit, so I know what it's like.
Yeah, that shit gets ugly really fast. Normally nice people turn absolutely vicious when the kids get involved.
Yeah.
Imagine what happens when you throw Alex Jones into that.
So Alex Jones' lawyer during proceedings claimed that Alex Jones in the suit that he was filing, Alex Jones is, quote, a performance artist.
Mm-hmm.
Which, in other words, means that Alex Jones is a flam-flam man and he doesn't believe any of this shit.
Yeah.
He's basically playing a character.
I think his ex-wife said in sort of response, he's not a stable person. He says he wants to break Alec Baldwin's neck. He wants J-Lo to get raped. I am concerned that he is engaged in felonious behavior, threatening a member of Congress.
Yeah.
He broadcasts from home. The children are there watching him broadcast.
Yeah. Oh, and you didn't mention the part about how he basically told his kids to film his ex-wife whenever they were over at her house.
Yes, so he's also got ideas for segments from the kids.
Uh-huh.
Wow.
Yeah. And of course, Alex Jones says, no, that's bullshit. I am completely telling the truth. I am 100% real.
And he says he only talks about what he believes in.
Yeah.
Okay.
Which doesn't include when he made up the Pizzagate stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So either he's bullshitting the audience or he's perjuring himself.
Yeah.
Probably a little bit of both.
Yeah. Just, wow.
Mm-hmm.
People like this just disgust me, but whatever.
Yeah, I think he also said that he smokes weed once a year to test the potency of it.
Yeah.
I guess he suspects it's getting stronger or something.
Yeah.
The man is making it stronger every year.
Yeah, he's convinced that the CIA or whatever is intentionally making marijuana more potent for some reason. I of course would replace marijuana with cocaine or PCP.
She's doing something. That's really
and great. 1 year and every year with every other day ending in a Y.
Yeah, there's a lot of work of marijuana.
Yeah, there's a lot of his behavior that is absolutely he is taking some kind of speed. That whole thing about him like constantly ripping off his shirt, and if you ever notice when he does that, his like torso is like bright red. Which means he's definitely on something.
Hmm. Yeah, I want to say there was some sort of testimony from like a masseuse or something. Not masseuse, like a psychologist he would go to. And talk about how he always would take his shirt off. And nobody else does that.
Hmm. Yeah. Yeah, there's just a lot of that just does not make sense.
Nope.
But this might be his downfall too. What comes out of this, I would like to think, but I also know that about 80% of his audience are trained sheep, so.
Well, yeah, they still believe in Pizzagate even when he admits it's fake.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, he's just protecting us. He's just throwing everybody else off the trail.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So, moving on from there, in science news, climate change is actually causing Oh, actually, yeah, you're right. I did. I skipped right over it.
We got one more criminal to talk about.
Yeah, this one. Dumb in the dumbass criminal segment. A man at Coachella stole over 100 phones, but was caught by someone using the Find My iPhone.
Yeah.
Derp.
This guy's not very bright.
Mm-hmm.
Bright enough to get 100 phones without being caught once. But
there's
not
some talent going on there.
Not figuring out how much intelligence get in out of there.
Yeah, so if you're gonna nab a phone, the first thing you should do is turn it off. But well, then again, with an iPhone, though, that's actually not a good idea because, you're not getting back into it after that.
Mm-hmm.
It's what you call trying too much.
Mm-hmm.
Went for too many phones.
Yep.
You should have gotten like 50 and gotten the hell out of there.
Yeah.
As fast as possible and started selling them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Or Android phones.
Yeah. And look at his mugshot too. He's like, I fucked up. Oh boy. Alright. So now actually on to real science news. Climate change has actually caused a river in the Yukon Territory to reroute itself.
Yeah, I don't know how this happened. But
yeah, so Yukon Territory, of course, that's in Canada.
Yeah.
Let's see. Climate change has caused the massive Kaskawalsh Glacier in the Yukon to retreat so much that its meltwater abruptly switched direction in the first documented case of river, quote-unquote, river piracy in modern times.
river piracy.
Okay. Instead of flowing into the Slims River and then north to the Bering Sea, water has changed course and now flows south toward the Cocos River, the Gulf of Alaska, and the Pacific Ocean.
Hmm. So also known as. There's not many people that live in this area, is there, Phil?
No, it's not.
It's the Yukon, so mostly it's going
to
be.
Yeah, the map shows it's right to the east of Alaska's border.
Yukon, it's Yukon territory, so mostly it's going to be French fur trappers with beards riding sleds.
And this looks to be like a national park, so there's probably nobody anywhere near this.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's good that there's nobody that was relying on this river.
Yeah, it would suck if you were expecting the water to flow in one direction, so you've got a dam basing there.
Yeah. The good thing about Canada... The good thing about Canada is that it's really hard for Canada to have anything close to a water crisis because they've got so much freaking glacial water and shit.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, we got so much water it doesn't know what to do.
Nope. Apparently not.
And essentially got all that north part of it that's just storing all this snow and ice and water for you.
Yeah. Basically, Phil, what I'm saying is when the water crises get bad in the U.S., you'll know why we're bombing you.
Okay.
Yeah, right now it's about the cows and the farmers.
Yeah.
What Trump is mad about Canada with.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, in other Canada news, apparently Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is apparently pushing forward legislation now to go ahead and make marijuana legal, and he also scrubbed all the scrubbing all the criminal records for people who were convicted and imprisoned for marijuana charges.
Yes.
Because he's prime minister. And because he's prime minister and because they don't have private prisons in Canada, so he can do shit like that.
Yep. Which will be.
All right, so. I've gone from there. We have. Oh, God, Silicon Valley. They have created something brand new, their newest innovation, known as the Juicero. A $400 Wi-Fi enabled juicer. Seriously.
And all it does is squeezes a bag of juice.
Yep.
It's not actually juicing anything.
No.
Oh, okay. Look, this Internet of Things bullshit needs to stop.
The hilarious thing is that people obviously figured out they could just squeeze the bags. Get the juice that way.
Yeah.
And the way the company describes it, they call it hand squeeze hacks. They call that a hack.
God damn.
So these guys are up their own ass.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I do love this gif here of The Simpsons when What's-His-Face is doing an infomercial for a juicer, and it's like, oh, up until now, the only way to get the juice was to squeeze it into your face.
Yeah, sometimes with these embedded devices, just because you can do it doesn't mean you should.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you really need to ask yourself the question, do we need this? And I think the answer with this one is no.
No, we really do not.
I think they're still fighting hard.
$400 for something that squeezes you.
Yeah,
Silicon Valley is out of control.
Overblown sense of what you bring to society.
Yeah.
There's the obvious joke of Kylie Jenner handing a Juicero bag to a police cop. And I think they're defending themselves really well by saying, "Oh, we'll be able to send notes to your juicer if we find out one of our ingredients is bad and we need to recall."
Or, you know, you could do what everyone does, which is what everyone else does, which is put out a recall notice for the local media.
Yeah.
We have all these solutions for this stupid thing.
Yeah, my guess is somebody just saw the June oven and thought they could do something similar. Because, that thing is ridiculous, but also actually useful. So, look it up. It's the June oven. It's a $1,600 Wi-Fi enabled internet connected oven.
Mm. Okay. Yeah.
This is where we are.
Yeah.
I guess they got about $120 million in venture capital.
Mm.
And some of their investors were surprised that you could just squeeze the bags.
Proving it doesn't take much
to get the money from people.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, God. I'm sorry, I just... Why?
I know. Right?
Because somebody gave them millions of dollars to make it. Yeah. Their stupid idea.
Yep.
Well, apparently they just had millions of dollars just lying around they couldn't figure out something to do with.
Yeah.
Somewhere
along the way they thought this was worth it.
Yeah.
Get it.
Yeah, they're going to revolutionize the juicing industry like Apple did. The computer industry.
Mm. When there's already another internet-connected juicer that actually makes juice.
But. No, but this one, see, they send you the juice, and you're supposed to only get it from them, because it's not going to work
with
off-brand juice bags.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. I don't know. Now to something a little bit funnier. So, there was the Sarasota Open that happened this week. It was, of course, tennis.
Yeah.
It was in it was between Francis Tiafoe and Mitchell Krueger.
Definitely watch the video.
Yeah, the video is just makes this all the much better. So as this match is going on, all of a sudden they start hearing these really loud moaning noises.
And this is a tennis match where you pretty much only hear the announcer when he's like, 15 love.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not a big crowd because these aren't big name tennis players.
Yeah. So,
and it seems like it's at night.
Well, they are now.
Yeah.
And so here's the thing. They start hearing these loud moaning noises. And you're thinking, huh.
Yeah, the announcer is like, oh, there must be a phone. Somebody's just watching an adult video.
Watching porn on their phone. No.
I imagine after
turns
that,
out there was an
to figure out where it came from.
Yeah. Turns out there was a couple across the pond at an apartment complex. Apparently some chick was getting the D so well that it carried over across the pond and into this little area.
Sound is great over water.
Oh,
just
yeah.
Reflects. And it's great when you watch the video because you see TFO getting ready to serve and he realizes what he's hearing. And he's just like freaking out.
And you know this dude's going to claim bragging rights for years.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think they get another couple of points down.
Mm-hmm.
And he hears it continuing. He looks around and he's like, you can't be that good.
Yeah. Oh, apparently it was.
Yeah.
Because, damn, there ain't no other reason a woman moans that loudly.
Yep.
And for that long. Mm. This went on for a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
Yep,
Florida for you.
Yep.
Huh?
Love 40.
Of course. Well, in other apartment-related news, just another reason why we need to rise up against the rich. There's an apartment resident that's for really ritzy people in London that are suing a neighboring art gallery because they have no blinds.
Yeah, essentially, the art gallery installed a new viewing platform, which was approved before the apartment complex existed.
Yeah.
So this wasn't them creating this to get more tourists up there.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially they could see into these people's apartments. And if you click on the link, you can see the pictures where they've got no blinds.
Mm-hmm.
Like this whole problem we solved by just putting up blinds in all these windows.
You're already wealthy enough. Get some blinds.
You can afford blinds.
And it seems like somebody got particularly mad that they put up just cardboard silhouettes of the guy who ran the art gallery and mm-hmm. his family in underwear.
Yeah.
In their underwear, just like...
Because they're wealthy assholes.
Yeah. Mm. And instead of buying blinds to cover up all their windows, they decide mm-hmm. they're going to sue the art gallery for £19 million.
Yeah.
Claiming that they're violating their human rights.
Oh, mm. God damn it.
Yeah, this court case isn't going to go anywhere.
Put up some fucking blinds if you don't want people looking in your goddamn apartment building.
Yeah. In other
wonder
news,
why the people that fucking designed your apartment building didn't put up fucking blinds thinking nobody could watch anything.
Yeah.
In other news, if you're looking for new spots to throw rocks at, well, you got a whole carpet apartment with some big wide windows.
Yeah. It's pretty much all window.
Yeah. So go nuts. I would make some sort of argument about those living in glass houses, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Too easy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Too literal, really.
Yeah, you can look us up on Twitter and just find out all the pictures people have been taking over the last couple years mm-hmm. of these people.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, this is what you take it up with your landlord.
Yeah. Jerks.
Yeah. So in music news, Korn. Everybody remembers Korn.
Yeah. They were pretty awesome, and then they did an album with Skrillex for some reason.
Yeah. Yeah, so they've got a newer touring bassist, because I guess Fieldy isn't with them right now.
Yeah, I think he's coming back on May 6th.
Yeah. And their touring bassist is apparently none other than Ty Trujillo, which is Robert Trujillo's 12-year-old son.
Yeah,
he's got the perfect hair for it, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Robert Trujillo, of course, is currently bass player for Metallica.
Yeah. I'm not sure how the chaperoning goes for something like this, but
I think his mom is touring with him.
Yeah.
There's a video here of her backstage just filming him.
Yeah,
seeing him doing the head swirl with his hair flying around.
I don't doubt that he has the ability.
Oh, he does. Yeah, there's
good enough for Korn at least.
Yeah, he's talented.
Yeah, and remember, this is Korn, so it's like that bass with only three. How many strings is it?
Looks like three. But these pictures aren't very high res. So.
It's actually a 6-string bass.
It might be.
But or a 5-string. I think it's actually a 5-string. Mm-hmm. I think two of the other strings are colored black, I think.
Yeah, maybe that's it.
Yeah. But I gotta admit, that's gotta be like the fucking dream job for a 12-year-old.
It's true.
It's like, what did you do during
I trained
your
with
vacation?
Korn.
Yeah.
I toured with Korn.
Like, what did you do? Let's see, this is 12 years old, so this is like around 5th grade, right? So it's like
5th or 6th grade.
Hey, what did you do on your summer vacation? I went to Disney World. What did you go to what did you do on your summer vacation? I went to the beach. What did you do with your summer vacation? I toured with a rock band and got bitches.
Yeah.
I played bass. Bitches love the bass.
Yeah. It's all about that bass.
Yeah.
I've actually heard Korn's new album, and it's pretty rad. Yeah, he does that, too, sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
Just because, of course, he has
to. Mm-hmm. All right, so we now got some more science news. There was a new exoplanet discovered. Yeah, it is. Autoplay. It is a rocky orb about 1.5 times the size of Earth, about 40 light years from here. It circles a dwarf star known as LHS-1140. Every 25 days, an orbit that puts it in the quote-unquote Goldilocks zone, where temperatures are conducive to liquid water and perhaps life as we know it. So this is like in the last 3 years, like the third or like fourth exoplanet that we've discovered that has this.
Yeah, potential for life.
Potentially
yeah.
habitable.
Yeah. Hmm. Which yeah. kind of makes it clear that I'm pretty sure the further out we go, we're probably eventually going to come across some actual honest to God intelligent life.
Yeah. Let's just hope that we don't run into them while Trump is still president.
Yeah.
Because they'd be all like, what the fuck is wrong with you people?
Better.
Yeah.
Hope they're not like us.
Yeah.
Well, that would be worse.
Yeah, because if they do turn out to be like us, then the first thing they're going to do is mount an invasion.
Yeah,
I've heard a good sort of stand-up joke is the way you know that there's intelligent life out there is it hasn't tried to contact us yet.
Sadly, I think that's probably valid at this point.
Just going to stay the hell away from those crazy motherfuckers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think one of the things with this is that they're sort of waiting for the next generation of satellite tech
mm-hmm.
to potentially get much better tools to observe and figure out what's going on with this planet.
Yep. Yeah,
and at the rate that private space is advancing, that's going to happen sooner rather than later.
Probably yep. within our lifetimes. So, all right, so... Now in some movie news, James Gunn is set to return for the third Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, because he's done the second one too, right?
Yep.
And do we have any release date on that?
May 5th.
May 5th, okay. Definitely going to go see it. Yeah, so you got to... I got to really give it James Gunn and that this guy took probably one of the more obscure groups of Marvel characters and made them just huge.
Yeah.
Because I don't think people really understand, you know, how much that first movie had going against it.
Yeah.
When it's like, well, these are the first heroes trailer. That nobody knows.
Hmm. Yeah.
Like every other one.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, James Gunn, I mean, obviously this wasn't his first movie. He's been making movies for a long time now.
Yeah.
Yeah, but on the scale of trauma stuff.
Yeah, mostly. It was indie flicks. Or he was touring with his band or something. But
yeah.
Marvel
seems to be stepping out of the, oh, we have to get established people.
Mm-hmm.
Because what was the movie we talked about last week they were working on? Ragnarok, Thor Ragnarok.
Mm-hmm.
That's being helmed by a director that only worked on New Zealand movies.
Yeah.
This is his first Hollywood movie is Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah.
So they're...
that's not necessarily unprecedented. I mean...
No, but it's cool that they're reaching out to that level of director to these big, huge spectacles.
Yeah. Those who don't know, Empire Strikes Back... was actually directed by an Eastern European film director, fairly obscure one who had made a bunch of indie movies, and George Lucas was into him, so he offered him the job to direct the film, and that's the reason why Empire Strikes Back is awesome.
So,
all right, well,
yeah, I think they're finally getting their first female director on a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie with Captain Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
The team that did Grand Mississippi, I think is what it's called.
Yeah.
And Full Nelson is working on that, so man and woman taking the helm of that movie, which is going to be pretty cool to see.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We like.
All right. So now we got some Netflix news. And this one is a fairly... it's a sort of obscure subject, but it's been getting just a lot of attention. So back in 1969 in Baltimore, Maryland, a 26-year-old nun named Sister Kathy Sesnick disappeared and was assumed murdered. And it's been an unsolved case for over – well, 26 years, and apparently this guy, what's his name? It is directed by Ryan White, who made The Case Against Eight. which, for those who don't know, that was a documentary about the effort to overturn the Prop 8 in California.
Yeah.
So there is supposedly what happened is that there was a priest who was on staff at the school. I guess it was a Catholic school that she worked at. Has long been considered a suspect. And apparently some of the former students as well. They're sort of, I guess what's happening is they're trying to going after, the audience that did watched Making a Murderer.
That's what it sounded like.
Yeah. I'm always up for some interesting documentaries on some obscure subjects. So,
Netflix,
so we'll get
all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm. Another Netflix news, The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt will have its season 3 beginning on May 19th.
Oh, yeah. So with this season, Kimmy is going to college. And not to have all the wacky adventures there, the rest of her friends are also doing their own crazy stuff.
Yeah.
They definitely mention Titus Andromedus thinks he finds his boyfriend cheating on him, decides to emulate Beyonce's Lemonade in response to this. And there's some great parts of this trailer that's all about him just running around in this big yellow dress outfit, singing Into the Bats, and then beating up his car.
Yep.
Just some great shit. That's just another great series for Netflix.
Well, and then further in more Netflix news, Netflix will be rebooting in 2019 with Gina Rodriguez, Carmen Sandiego.
Yay, I think.
Yeah. So, back when we were kids, obviously, what started was, of course, the Carmen Sandiego computer games, which were educational software. And pretty much, it was either if you were in a public school, it was either that or Oregon Trail.
Yeah, up here it was Carmen Sandiego. Down there, it was probably Oregon Trail.
And it was freaking everywhere, man. I mean, it was so popular it inspired a cartoon and inspired a game show.
Yeah, I remember that game show.
I used to watch that.
Yeah.
It was freaking everywhere for a while.
Still
and
going
then it,
in that series, by the way.
Yeah, it is technically still going. It's just it kind of faded from the public eye.
Yeah, it's being used in schools. So.
Yeah. So I guess Netflix is either betting either on nostalgia or this sort of newer generation coming back to watch Carmen Sandiego again, because it is a cartoon.
I would guess a bit of both.
Yeah. Now, of course, the fact that there's going to be at least one douchebag who's going to point this out, some idiot's going to be just like, Carmen Sandiego, but she's brown now. Her name is Carmen Sandiego. I'm pretty sure she's always been Spanish or Latino.
It was voiced
or
by Rita Moreno back then.
But yeah, so I'm glad to. I will admit it's a pretty good franchise. I am glad to see it coming back. It's just kind of out of the blue.
Yeah,
yeah.
You could probably use these tend to be.
Yeah.
You could probably use some sort of like focused series. That show and the games and the game show and all that was kind of all over the place.
Oh yeah,
it sort of became like the roadside books you would get for like each town. You would like collect this stuff. It got to that kind of level.
Oh yeah,
I think it was a game. It was either a game or some sort of book. It was like, where in South Dakota is Carmen Sandiego?
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's a pretty specific place for her to be.
Yeah. Oh, no, she's trying to steal the Mount Rushmore, because that's usually how that shit went.
Yeah, yeah, trying to steal Mount Rushmore. I don't know if she thought about the physics of what she's attempting to do, but okay.
I mean,
doesn't matter. Travel. She's Carmen Sandiego, bitch.
Yes. It'll work.
Yeah, she's traveled through time, space, all that shit.
Yeah. So. And finally, we have now the first trailer for Marvel's Cloak and Dagger coming to Freeform TV in 2018.
Yep. And it's a trailer, all right. Doesn't really tell you a whole heck of a lot. There's a whole lot of wub-wubs.
There's some wub-wubs and some weebly-woos.
Yeah. I don't know. No, this didn't really speak to me.
Yeah. Cloak and Dagger is kind of more one of the obscure. I mean, they've only been around since like 1982. So.
Well, I remember that movie back in 83.
Yeah, it seems like the trailer is.
Oh, and did I mention they're an interracial couple?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the trailer was kind of weird watching it, because it's like, is this going to turn into like a teen drama thing?
Yeah.
Or is there going to be more of a focus on the superhero stuff?
Yeah.
It doesn't really get to the superhero stuff until near the end.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, that's why it's Cloak and Dagger.
Mm. I'm pretty sure
the white girl's the light.
Yeah. I'm actually pretty sure one of the reason that they're making this show is for our creator Bill Mantlo. So those of you who don't know your Marvel history, Bill Mantlo was the creator of. Well, he did a bunch of shit. He worked on Micronauts for Marvel. He worked on. Probably his most long-running famous work was Rom the Space Knight.
Mm.
And he also co-created Rocket Raccoon. Mm. He was also an attorney. And he worked as a public offender. But the problem was he was the victim of...
Did you just say public offender?
No, I said defender.
Okay.
But, yeah, he was a... He exposed himself to kids. Come on, dude. Seriously, keep up here.
Well, it's what I heard you say.
Yeah,
honestly, that's what I heard too.
Anyway, the point is, he was the victim of a hit and run accident in 1992, and which caused some serious brain damage, and he's basically been in institutional care ever since. And there's been these every so often there's been these fundraisers and stuff from Marvel and from a bunch of other folks in the comics community getting him money. He actually got to get a private screening of Guardians of the Galaxy. Apparently he liked it. But you know, what Michael said, that Michael Mantlo is his brother.
Yeah.
So I think one of the reasons they're trying to get him some more funds for his care. So, that might be one of the reasons why, they're wanting to make this show.
Yeah.
Since he's a character, he can get royalties.
Yeah.
So,
hopefully, with it's the first trailer. Maybe in subsequent ones, I'll start to flesh out a bit more. Because, I'm willing to give it the benefit of the doubt, but this one doesn't really quite grab me just yet.
And
I guess I read that Cloak has technically appeared in one of the other Marvel shows. He essentially creates a black hole that sucks somebody into it. I don't know what it was.
Just to sort of give you an idea, it says according to his biographer in 2006, for a while Bill was comatose. Although no longer in a coma, the brain damage he suffered in the accident is irreparable. His activities of daily living are severely curtailed, and he resides in a healthcare facility where he receives full-time care. This was back in 2006. And then Michael, who's his caregiver, of course, his brother, said Bill is and has been trapped in a world of confusion and despair since his accident. The cognitive deficiencies he suffered have left him unable to reason or understand his situation, and he struggles daily to maintain any control over his own mind. For someone with his intellect and imagination, this was the absolute worst type of injury that could have ever happened to him.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, so back in 2006, David Yurkovich actually released a biography, which is which is about called Bill Mantlo: A Life in Comics. All proceeds go to the Mantlo benefit, blah, 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 blah. So, again, that's one of the reasons probably why they're bringing this show forward.
Yeah.
So,
I should probably correct myself. The 80s Cloak and Dagger movie has nothing to do with this.
Nope.
I thought that was the joke.
Mm. Yeah, we thought that was the joke.
No, wasn't a joke. I was actually genuinely mistaken. I thought it was
no. So. It's all right. It's all right. We know you're a dumbass.
Nobody else has heard of this comic either.
Yeah, well,
I don't really blame people for not necessarily confusing the two.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, anyway, so, I do believe we have a show. So,
yeah.
I would like to remind all our viewers,
listeners.
I would like to remind all of you people watching that little line go across the screen as the seconds tick by on our little cast here that if you'd like to write into us, ask a question, have something you want us to read on the air, you can reach us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. And also, as well as iTunes, you can also listen to our lovely little cast on Google Play, RSS, and pretty much any other format you can probably think of. In fact, at this point, if you've got an electronic toaster, you could probably play it on there as well.
Yep.
Just, make sure the toast gets out first. I mean, I'm not doing that gluten-free thing or anything. It's just a pappy suggestion.
Yeah.
So, with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. And for Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Niflin, and Chris Elogi, I would like to say goodnight, get some sleep, and remember, there were no Irish slaves in America.